So hi folks, hello once again, good evening, and you're very welcome along to another program, to another edition of Down Your Way. Yeah, you can hear from the beautiful music in the background, we're here at Holy Cross Abbey. And over the next 12 months, we'll be travelling to many, many beautiful sites like Holy Cross Abbey, throughout County Tipperary. Willie Hayes is with me. Willie, you're very welcome to Down Your Way. What a special moment here in Holy Cross Abbey to record a program right in the church.
Oh, amen. What a great occasion it is to be here on this lovely sun-filled May evening, with the sun slanting in the western window and hitting the high altar here that's there stationed under the beautiful arches of the tower. And here we are on this glorious evening now, and I'm delighted to be associated with the program that you're doing here this evening.
Absolutely, Willie. Of course, you wrote the book a couple of years ago, of course, the Holy Cross Abbey and the history behind it and all the story and the awakening of the Abbey, it was called. And it won, of course, the Tipperary Enna Award, a special award for books written in County Tipperary by people like yourselves and many more. Willie, what brought all this about, the great Holy Cross Abbey and the restoration?
Well, it happened, Eamon, in a simple enough way, really. I mean, the idea of restoring it as the church for the parish. When I came here first in 1966 or thereabouts, the idea of restoring the Abbey Church here was an idea that wasn't even thought about, because Holy Cross Abbey is a very important national monument, and national monuments are not allowed to be restored for worship on a general ongoing basis, because that was the law that was stipulated, but that was entered into, established when the Church of Ireland Act was passed, disestablishing the Church of Ireland, and all the famous buildings were taken over then by the state. But Holy Cross was a very important national monument. It could not be, restoration was out of the question. Conservation, fine. And the Office of Public Works had conserved it very well. But, so nobody thought of, and least of all myself, that this would ever take place. Mm-hmm. And also, the Abbey Church was used as a graveyard for generations.
It was a massive program to take on, wasn't it?
It was. Now, it happened in a very simple way that here we are standing in the sanctuary of at the moment, and near us here is the sedilia, one of the most treasured items of exquisite sculpture that's here in the Abbey, mm-hmm. in the church. And there was, I noted at that time, a lot of leakage of water down through it from above. Just above us now is just the stone ceiling. But above the stone ceiling, there was no roof mm-hmm. at all at the time. So it was very hard to prevent water from seeping down.
So you had the tower above that, of course.
And the tower, likewise, mm-hmm. is part of it too. But that didn't have a roof either. Mm-hmm. It has the stone ceiling over the altar, but the roof above was, well, it had been missing for hundreds of years. But anyway, whatever protective plaster work that the Office of Public Works did above the stone ceiling wasn't effective enough. And at the time too, that was 1967, around that time, there was the plans for the restoration, the rebuilding of the old church, which meant that it was going to be changed and its character entirely varied from what it was. You know, this fine, solid barn church, great example of churches of the time. And I thought it would be a pity to go ahead with those plans for the parish church. But anyway, the Archbishop at the time, Archbishop Morris, was insisting that the remodeled plans for the church parish church we were using would go ahead. But anyway, I said, if that goes ahead, there's going to be plenty of slates available. Mm-hmm. A great quarry slates, and ideal for putting a protective roof over this part of the Abbey Church. Mm-hmm. So with that idea in mind, I was making contact with the Office of Public Works to arrange a meeting to put this idea to them. Mm-hmm. This was just a protective roof to protect the Abbey Church much better than anything else. So when I went up to an arranged meeting, and I met Percy Leclerc and I met Marcus O'Hoig, he was the chief archaeologist, and Percy Leclerc was the chief inspector of the inspector of National Monuments at the time. And we sat down and chatted and talked, what are you doing down there at all in Holy Cross? And then I told him, and I put my idea, you know, about the slates and so on. And they said, did the idea ever occur to you maybe to restore the Abbey Church and use it instead? Mm-hmm. And that
prompted the whole idea for you.
It did. It prompted me. And I came away from the meeting assured that that there was a possibility it could be done. Mm-hmm. And they said, when you go home, you have a chat with your Archbishop. And if he's behind it, well, then we might be able to make more progress. So you see, there was an open door. So I did, and the meeting was arranged, and it went from there. So you see, it started in a very simple, indirect way.
So here we are, all those near 50 years later, standing here in this beautiful restored church.
Yes, it went from that. But of course, there was many stages to be gone through, including getting an act passed through Parliament to make an exception for Holy Cross, so that despite what the old law preventing it from restoration for use as a parish church, Holy Cross Act was passed, making the exception. And that was another historical moment. And then there was also, of course, getting the permission from the people who had burial rights here, burial traditions. And that too was a marvellous step because of the magnanimity of people to allow that to happen.
Hugely sensitive, all the work.
Very sensitive. It was very sensitive indeed. And if permission wasn't given by all the people who had burial rights here, it couldn't have proceeded at all.
For many people
here. But it did proceed.
For many people here in the community, Willie, they give you at the brainchild of it all, and well done. It's a great project, and has been fulfilled so many times.
Well, thank you very much, Eben, and I would like to congratulate you too on all the broadcasting that you've done and all the recording that you have done, and the number of times that you have again and again promoted and publicised the Abbey Church here in Holy Cross.
Well, you hear us as always. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Eamon.
Tom Garrow is with me. Tom, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Eamon.
You know, we were talking to Willie there, Willie Hayes, a man that has achieved so much here in this beautiful place, Holy Cross.
An extraordinary achievement for any man. We were extremely lucky that he was here when we needed the Abbey restored.
Stone by stone, he knows all about every stone that was lifted and shifted and moved around here.
Every single stone that was put in place, Willie knows where it is. He is an extraordinary love of the whole Abbey, and it comes across in his talk and how he talks about it.
Tom, we're here in the Cloister Guard, and I suppose
when Cistercians were granted a place to build a monastery, they cleared the site, mm-hmm. and they built it to an exact order that was laid down by the order themselves. The Cloister Guard was always to the south, the church in a cruciform shape was to the north, then there was the east wing was where they had their chapter house and their parlour underneath, and then the dormitory for the choir monks was above. Mm-hmm. On the west wing, they had the cellars underneath, and they had the dormitory for their lay monks, lay brothers, above. These were the people who worked the farms and the granges, because they had a huge farm. Mm-hmm. 8,000 acres was granted to them initially.
Tom, just wanted to take you, I know we have lots of people to talk to on this, but the tours have grown so dramatically in the last 12 months here in Holy Cross.
Well, Yes, and I think it's a great credit to John Burke, who thought up the idea of having Holy Cross Community Network and getting a training program going with a grant from Leader to train people. And we have just a lovely group of people, interested, enthusiastic, and giving the tours now free, voluntarily, guiding people through. Because so many people were arriving at Holy Cross Abbey, they had heard the fame of the place, and they were coming in, and they were missing the high points of what's here.
Yeah, I know we're going to find out a lot of the high points here tonight on the Down Your Way show. Tom, I know we have lots of guests as well. The high points, Tom, can you kind of, I'll give you 30 seconds.
Okay, we have the most preserved cloister arcading of any abbey, medieval abbey in the country. We have the best preserved chapter house doorway of any medieval abbey. We have the best range of medieval windows. We have the oldest bell. We have the high point of Cistercian art in two shrines in the abbey. And of course, we have the relic of the True Cross, which you can't but say is a very important draw.
Absolutely indeed. Tom Geller, that was Tom Geller we were talking to there. Camilla Donnelly, you're very welcome to Down Your Way.
Thank you very much.
You're a new guide, a new tour guide here.
Well, I am an apprentice. I'm not fully qualified yet. I've undergone the training program and I have to do my little bit of following on the real guides, and then I'll do it.
Mr. Gallagher, of course, is what you call a real tour guide, isn't he?
He's a real tour guide. You see, himself and John Burke now, they'd be the experts, So we have to learn our bit and...
Learn your trade, as they say.
Learn our trade, exactly, the very thing.
What did you find, what was an example of this place that you liked when you read about Holy Cross Abbey?
Well, the thing about it is that it's a living abbey, you know, that it's part of the community, and the fact that it was restored, and it's... It's such a draw for people. They come from all over the country and from all over the world, you know, and it's great then to be able to tell them bits about it rather than have them wandering around and looking at things and not really getting the full story of the abbey.
Bill Cook is with us. Thanks, Carmel, for that. Bill Cook is with us. How are you doing, Bill?
Not too bad at all. No, thank you very much.
Good experience here in this beautiful place.
Excellent. I love coming out here. I've been coming out here now since I was a child, when the place is in a complete ruin. And I remember the frescoes inside in full colour. But now, unfortunately, they're a little bit faded. But the whole place is magnificent. My father worked here. He was a stonemason. My brother worked here. And some of other members of my family worked here. So I have a very keen interest in Holy Cross Abbey for many, many years. It's wonderful.
You're looking forward to the next year and the year ahead, of course, taking tours.
Well, I am. I, like Cameron, I served my time. I did a course and I'm serving my time. And it'll take a little while to become au fait with every highlight of the abbey. But... with time, we'll be able to pick things up as we go around with the real tour guides at the moment, like, you know.
Carol and Bill, you're very welcome, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Indeed, you're very welcome back to Down Your Way. Yeah, I'm walking right across the cloisters here in Holy Cross Abbey. What a beautiful evening, what a beautiful day. Mary Byrne is with me. Mary, are you going to tell me about the story of the eight hands? There's a sign as we're coming in through the door, in through the main gate here.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listeners, it's just inside the main entrance of the abbey in the cloister area. This particular plaque was done in the 1975 by a German man living locally, Tom Dietrich. And it's this particular one is illustrated in an old manuscript written in 1640. And this manuscript... tells the story of the eight hands. Holy Cross wasn't always known as Holy Cross, of course. It only got its name in 16th century. Before that, it was known as Ceall Uachtarlóin, which means the cell or the church of the eight hands. And this plaque here explains that to you. If you move closely, you will see a stylized tree and you'll see eight hands. Now, just to give you quickly the story, there was a hermit living locally up, we think, where the Protestant church is now. And this hermit was attacked by four bandits. They demanded his wealth and his treasure, which he didn't have any of. So with that, then, they asked him, OK, perform some sort of a miracle for us or we'll actually kill you. So he asked them not to tempt the Lord. So with that, there was a tree quite close by. three lowered its bows over the four bandits, and they, in their arrogance and disbelief, tried to protect themselves, lifted their arms stuck to the trees. With that, it lifted them, raised them up off the ground, and they were left dangling. Now, Donal Mór O'Brien, who was the founder, and he founded the Abbey in 1182, he came shortly afterwards. He heard the story, was enraged, and in his anger cut down the four bodies, leaving the bodies dropped to the ground, and the hands were stuck to the tree. And if you look closely at this, you will see the eight hands.
Absolutely, yeah, it's dead to be seen. But Mary, it's an amazing story, really, for the most part. But having said all that, is it fact or fiction, though? You know.
Well, it's
or folklore.
It's a folklore story, and it's nice. It's a nice story to tell, and we like to think maybe there's a little bit of truth or not, but it's just a nice story to tell, and it explains how the area got its name.
So if people come through the main gates, it's on the right-hand side as they come
on the wall, on the right-hand side, and dates to 1975 approximately.
Mary Byrne, I know you're one of the tour guides here as well.
Yes, I am, yeah. There's.
You enjoy it here?
Oh, I do, I love it. I'm involved now since almost 2 years, actually. Yeah. So it's great.
Talk to me about the timing of the guides and the timing of the tours, rather.
Well, the tours, we run the tours every Wednesday and Sunday at 2 p.m. And then for any groups, larger groups, tours can be organised at their will and at their... what to suit them, that we can run for half an hour, we can run for an hour. We run a lot of school tours also, and they're very popular.
Have you got Mary, the founding of the Abbey, Donal Mór O'Brien is treasured with finding of this famous Abbey.
He is, yes. Holy Cross Abbey was founded in 1182 by Donal Mór O'Brien, and he was the King of Limerick. Now his family, his ancestors, came to have the relic, which was given to them in 1110 by Pope Paschal, and the whole purpose to found the Abbey was to enshrine this relic, and of course that's how Holy Cross got its name, because of the relic. And the reason he founded it here was because it was on the edge of his territory, and also his mother was an O'Fogarty, and she came from the local clan, so that was the reason he founded it here by the banks of the River Shore.
Lovely, lovely. What a beautiful sight.
Okay.
Thanks Mary, for that. That was Mary Byrne joining us on Down Your Way. John Church is with us, one of the tour guides. John, I know there's some special features in this beautiful place, this Abbey, and I know you want to tell us.
Well, there's a lot. There's many finest examples in the country here, but we're here at the Chapter House doorway. This is the finest example, surviving Chapter House doorway in Ireland. So it's decorated with a billeted ornamentation, and the whole doorway has a Moorish influence. The doorway actually is interesting. It's lower than the other doorways around, and that is said that the monks would have to bow, because being a low doorway, they would have to bow going in. The chapter house was used for, the abbot would go in, they would go in every day in here and read a chapter from the rule of Saint Benedict. So, and then they would have a talk, comments, there could be confessions, a public confession. So every day there was a visit to the chapter house. The chapter house then was always very near to the church. Just anyway, it's a brilliant doorway.
Fantastic piece of architecture, John. But when you talk about a billeted doorway, to our listeners, John, what does that mean?
As you can see, Eamon, there's all these little projection pieces all around the doorway, all in perfect proportion all the way around. And they're the little bits jutting out. They're the billeted.
Yeah, but hand-carved.
Oh, yes, all hand-carved, yes. Hand, chisel and hammer, absolutely. But the perfection in symmetry, and not one a bit different than the other, all perfected. And then you can see at either side of the doorway, there's two little mason's marks. Each mason left a mark, and they're... as you can see here, they're there on this side.
You'd be the very right man to tell us this, because you've been an engineer for your trade, and you know it's so specialised, this work here in this Abbey, isn't it?
Absolutely. The detail, the carvings, the detail, even the mason's marks alone, there's some fantastic mason's marks. And as you'll see later on, as you come to the Waking Beer, the carvings on that are little birds, owls, mice, feline mask, tiny little mask. There's one in the green now, a bigger version done in wood on the green of the feline mask, but it's tiny. The whole place is just full of the finest architecture, medieval architecture in Ireland.
John Litton, it's a pleasure to have you on down your way.
Okay, nice to see you. Yes, here, yes.
Brendan Howling is with me. Brendan, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And you?
Where are we looking? What are we looking at here?
We're in the south transept between two altars, and when they built it in the 1420s onwards, they built this shrine, which is called the Waking Bier.
Is it a shrine to tell me about people when people died?
That was what was recorded in the triumphant history of the Church of the Holy Cross Abbey, mm-hmm. in about 1640 onwards, mm-hmm. and that's what it was called.
It's an amazing piece of work, isn't it?
It's absolutely. It's one of the highlights, keys of the Abbey, and its most beautiful columns. And supporting all of this structure, and inside, I think the sculptor, the stonemason, had a vision of what this was going to be like, with all the beautiful scrolls inside there.
It's just an amazing. You want to be here to see it, because we're here on site here.
It's the difficulty with all the benches, you can't really get a good view of it. Normally, in the original day, it would have stood out. As a great, glorious monument.
Absolutely. Well, Brendan, look at every success. I know you're pretty much part of the group here as well.
Yeah.
You join?
Do, yeah. Being a visitor, flying from over the water, you know.
Yeah, well, that's nice to be here.
It is very nice to be here, yeah. You've
been welcomed as well.
Thank you very much, yeah.
Brendan Howling, thanks very much.
Okay,
bye-bye. Michael Carley's with me. Michael, how are you?
Fine.
Yeah, you're welcome to Down Your Way, one of the guides as well. We're looking up here at the night stairs.
Yes.
And this is a very great feature here in the Abbey.
Yes, it's one of the high points of the Abbey. It's called the night stairs because the monks rose at 2 o'clock in the morning and processed down to the choir area just behind us here. Mm-hmm. And it was there they sang the first communal prayer of the day, which was vigils.
What was the idea, Mike? What's the idea, Michael, of rising at 2 o'clock in the day, in the night?
Well, it was the part of their system, part of the law or the order. Mm-hmm. All Cistercian monasteries did it and still do it to this day, I think.
Did you just come out at 2 o'clock? Did you go back again?
No, they would have read from one of their number would have read from the Old and New Testament, and they would have discussed it, and those who knew. The way around the Old and New Testament would explain and whatever. And they would pray on it as well, meditate on it.
It's a marvellous piece of stonework as well, isn't it?
Wonderful. It's the best preserved night stairs in the country. So it's one of our claims anyway.
Is it amazing when history is turned back, because Father Solstice is living quarters up there now?
Yes. The choir monks used to live there. The stairs goes directly from the body of the church up to the first floor, and that was where the choir monks slept. And as I said, up at 2 every morning, earlier on feast days, special feast days, and processed down, holding candles to show the way, and came around and sang here.
That's a very good point, because there was no electricity. There was no other way of seeing where you were going.
Exactly, a little bit before that time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great story, Michael, and thanks for telling us.
Not at all.
We're here in Holy Cross Abbey. Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic stories here from Holy Cross Abbey. We're going to take our second break at evening. We'll be back just after these. John Burke, you're very welcome to Down You.
Thanks, Eamon.
What a special. We're here up to the Sedilia, and what another special treasure here.
Yes, Eamon, a very important piece of stone architecture here. It's described as the finest piece of church furniture in stone in the country. It dates from the 15th century. And it's 12, 15 feet high, carved in Tipperary blue limestone.
Absolutely, and there's certain markings on this sedilia.
There is. There are four crests up over the near the canopy. The first crest is the one of the Holy Cross Abbey. It's a plain Latin cross. The next crest then is quite a large one, and it's the crest of the English royal family, dating from about 1423. The next one then is the Butler's crest, the Butlers of Ormond, who had a major role to play in the restoration here in the 1400s. They were patrons of the Abbey here from 1410 to about 1450. And the fourth one then is the Desmond Fitzgeralds, who were related through marriage with the Butlers.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, what were they used for, Celia?
It's a sedilia, it's the Latin word for seats, and it was where the concelebrant of Mass would sit and the two deacons sit either side of him. Mm-hmm. That's what its function is. It's known locally as the tomb of the good woman's son, which is a great story about the son of a king and queen of England who came to Ireland to collect Peter's pence. He ended up being murdered and robbed and buried in a forested area. Some monks found him, brought him back here and interred him at this part, and that's how we got one of the relics of the True Cross. But to hear the full story, at length you'd want to come on one of the tours. You'll have to join us.
Yes, I suppose that's special, and we never got around to doing one of the tours. John, I know you're very much involved in what happens here in the parish, and we're going to be talking to you later on and with network and all of that. I know, is that your favourite piece in Holy Cross?
This is, yes. It's one of my favourite pieces. I have a lot of pieces that I like, but this is particularly ornate and fantastically carved piece, and for anyone who comes in through the Abbey, they'll know where it is up on the altar.
As always, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Simon.
Absolutely beautiful, the bells of Holy Cross Abbey. Richard Long is going to tell us about them. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing very well. I can tell you quite a bit about the bells. There is much history attached to the bells as there is about the rest of the Abbey. Mm-hmm. They were discovered outside in an ancient church called Boolich out in
Gortnahoo,
exactly, yeah. And men were digging a grave back in the 1890s that discovered these. They were digging it in the area of the bell tower, and they discovered the bells, and they actually ended up inside in Dr. Croke's front yard. Well, the front now is the opposite side to the side we normally see.
That's the Archbishop's residence in Tullis.
Archbishop's residence in Tullis, yeah. Now, Dr. Croke is the same Dr. Croke that founded, or was involved in founding the GAA, and the Croke Park is called after him as well.
So they were brought out here and erected here?
Well, the story is a little longer than that now, because back in 1974, when the Abbey was nearing completion, at least the tower was, the then Dr. Morris came out. He a frequent visitor to the Abbey because he had a great interest in the development. And he met Mr.
Percy
Declare, exactly. Thanks for helping me out. And he just mentioned that there's two bells. He just noted that the tower was just finished, and he just noted that, or said to Mr. Declare, that there was two bells inside in his place, fine big ones, and they might be suitable for the bell tower. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Declare went in and had a look at him, and was very interested in him, and he got three experts down to have a look at him. One was from the Bell Foundry in Whitechapel in London. Another one was from St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin. And the other man was from UCD. I can give you the names now, but I think you're
getting tidy in time already.
Pardon?
Yeah. Getting tidy.
I am getting tidy in time, it is the thing. So, when they came and looked at him, they got really excited because they knew they were very old, and it turned out that one of them is the oldest bell in Ireland. Now, the parish priest in Gorton, who had his eye on one for a while because he was after reconstructing his church, Boolich was an ancient parish. Now, Gorton, who is the present one, and he was going to put up one of them in the newly rebuilt tower in it, but it was too heavy, too big. But it didn't seem to be a problem here, because at one stage here, there was five bells. And there's now three bells here.
And they rechristened them.
Yes, indeed. Dr. Morris actually rechristened him. The one that you had ringing there a minute ago is Michael, after the archangel. And there's a Gabriel up there as well, and you have a rope for that, but it's very, very hard to ring that one because it's mounted differently to the other two. And Rapier is the third bell there, but it has no rope at the moment. There was five bells here at one stage.
Well, nice story, Richard Long, and thanks for being with us. And Darren, you're one of the tour guides as well. You enjoy working with the tour guides?
I do very much. I love it, yeah. I love it.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Well, our curate from the parish is with us, fellow Sulcis Tierney. I suppose there's a lot of special parts in this church and special pieces of antiquity. Nothing more than where we are right now, the relic of the True Cross.
Yes, Eamon, the relic of the cross is, and of course the whole place gets its name from the fact that the Holy Cross is privileged to have a relic of the True Cross here. And I suppose most people are aware of the recent history of what happened in the relic. But I suppose, as some of the other contributors this evening would have been telling you about the importance of the cross down through the ages, and we're fortunate that we still have a relic of the cross here, in fact two relics of the cross here. And so many people come here to the Abbey for, they get great peace and in times of crisis, knowing that they're so close to the cross on which Christ himself suffered and died.
When you make the point about two relics, can you distinguish one within another?
Yes, the first one is the older relic. It's the Ormond relic. The Butlers of Ormond were great patrons of the Abbey here, and they were responsible for having the relic given here to the Abbey, or donated here to the Abbey. So that's a much older version, it's longer here in the Abbey. The other relic that's here was given by the Vatican when the Abbey was rededicated in 1975. And that's the one that I suppose a lot of people would be familiar with, or more familiar with, because it's the one that's usually used for blessings here, especially during the novena that takes place here every year.
They're here in the North Transept. What a beautiful place. What a beautiful setting for the relic.
Yeah. I suppose we had to make modifications here in the last number of years because of the unfortunate theft that took place here. I think it was 2011. And we were... I suppose we never thought that the relics would be a target for thieves. So we were quite surprised, shocked when they were targeted and when they were stolen. But again, thanks to the work of the Gardaí, who did a tremendous job in finding the relics and having them returned to us here in Holy Cross. And so we're very fortunate to have them here now. And as I say, they're a focal point and central point for Sunderland.
Michael Carley was talking to me earlier about the Knight Stairs and a great view of the Knight Stairs. I was just wondering, does the curate who lives up there in the top of the stairs, does he make an arrival down at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Eamon, I am...
To be honest here now.
I am fairly dedicated to the place here, but I don't think my dedication goes that far. It might be 3 or half 3 before I get down.
I'm just wondering about the dedication of the Cistercians. Wasn't it real dedication, or was it just a part of what they did in life?
They were very, very dedicated. I mean, it's when you hear of the kind of life of the Cistercians, the work, they had a lovely balance of work and prayer. And it was one of the things, I suppose, that was a part of the Cistercian life. And it's amazing because I suppose they attracted so many people of their time. Mm-hmm. And because they had that lovely balance between work and prayer, and their lifestyle was difficult and challenging by our standards today. They led a very, very simple life. They had great simplicity, and I suppose if we judge it in terms of today, when we have mobile phones and when we have washing machines and when we have all the modern cons, that their life was very difficult, but they were obviously very happy.
Sebastian, it's always nice to join us.
Thank you, Eamon.
We're going to take another break. We'll be back with the final part of Down Your Way from Holy Cross Abbey, just after these. Indeed, you're very welcome back to Down Your Way. Well, John Burke is back with us again. John, Community Network here in Holy Cross, I suppose the last number of years it's grown considerably.
It has, Eamon, yeah. We started off with a project of the Train the Tour Guides, most of who you met here tonight, and that was co-funded by North Tipperary Leader Partnership and South Tipperary Development Company. And without that funding, I suppose we wouldn't have got off the ground. We developed on those tours then to facilitate school tours, and we have 5 different levels of school tour, including worksheets for primary and post-primary schools. And I suppose anyone who's interested in a tour can email us at holycrossabbeytours@gmail.com. That's all one word, holycrossabbeytours@gmail.com. Another project we're involved in at the moment is hiddentipperary.com. It's a new initiative set up in partnership with other attractions around Tipperary, including Farney Castle, Upper Church, Cormacstown Heritage Centre and different places like that. We're also involved on Easter weekend there on the Pilgrim Pat Day, where we organised a walk from the Cathedral to Holy Cross Abbey, and there were over 70 people took part in that. In conjunction with the Abbey, or with the Cathedral and Cabra Wetlands, the Derry na Flann Trail, Eamon, was launched last week, again funded by South Tipperary Development Company, and that takes in a number of different sites right across from Slievarda Hills through Littleton Bog over to Holy Cross here itself. There's an audio guide and a booklet available to download. If you go to the Holy Cross Ballycahill parish site, you'll find that website. Another medium-term project is the Butler Trail. And the Butler Trail starts in Carrick and Shore, goes through Clonmel and onto Care, and we're working with Certip Development Company to bring that to Holy Cross and Farnley Castle as well. And on the long-term projects, then we're looking at restoring the mill here beside the Abbey to get the wheel working again. But the most recent project we had was a stone and wood carving course that was run by Philip and Liz Quinn from Stone Mad across the road here from the Abbey. And they're here tonight with some of their artists. So I'll hand you over to
absolutely. Philip. Thanks, John. Thanks, John, for giving me the brief outline on the development. The stone people are here. How are you doing, lads?
How are you going?
Philip and Liz?
Fine, thanks.
You have a business, of course, here on the top of the village?
Yeah. We run workshops in carving stone and wood, and we do pieces and commission pieces.
Yeah, you have a marvellous couple of pieces there in the green, the old green in Holy Cross.
Yeah, well, they were all completed by the people that are here around us this evening there, and all through the village. It was a workshop that we did through the community network, and all the people that got involved in it here did their own pieces. They picked pieces from the Abbey around here.
I love the title of your company, Stone Mad.
Stone Mad by name, Stone Mad by nature, maybe.
Yeah, terrific. Your involvement in the company.
Well, I suppose I'm the gopher. I'm the general factotum, I think. While the workshop was going on, I think I probably was more of a distraction because I was inclined to talk to the people and put them off their work. But apart from doing stone carving, I think we did a lot of seed and plant exchanging, and there were lots of books and music and things swapped, so it was a great project.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you're here in the Abbey, like, you're talking about stone carving, you're really in the middle of it all here, aren't you?
Oh yeah, sure, all around you, it's just beautiful, all the pieces, and every time you come in you see something different, and everybody, just it's beautiful, it's great inspiration.
What you have done as well here, the village looks absolutely magic.
It's lovely. It's a lovely spot, anyway. But the people put such time and effort into it. Like, it's a grand evening this evening, but in the cold, wet evenings that people come out and they.
So the people commission work from all over the country for your work.
Yeah. We get pieces from all over the place. Two pieces all over the place for gardens and for towns and villages and things. Yeah.
Thanks, Philip. Lucas, how are you?
Very good. Very well.
Very welcome. You're very much involved in the stonework here.
Well, I was on the course.
Have you enjoyed it?
Oh, absolutely. It was a fabulous course. But it brought me back to times when I was a child, when I was a boy, I was at school. And we hadn't students. We had a master. We had no teacher. We had a master. And here I meet another master. Stone master. Stone and wood master. Yeah. Fabulous. The course is absolutely wonderful. And there was 10 of us on it, and we were up there. Now it's outdoors. It's like there's no. We're not in a building. We're outside, just a roof over. You open the morning, it's a bit of cold, like, you know. But once you get started, you're grand.
And you're tipping away with a hammer and chisel all day. Are you?
That's all the time. Yeah. Well, you get a break, but when you get a break, that's a great thing, because when the break comes, you see the vanity takes over. Then, like, you know, and you go inside, and
scones are made,
and a bit of heat. No, it starts with soup, homemade soup, and sandwiches. Yeah. And then from there on, you graduate, and there's tea and cake and so on after that. And that's all down to the banditry herself here.
It's the place to be, wasn't it?
Yeah, so only during the church here, it asks everybody for a bull of bust for herself.
Terrific, thank you very much. Okay. A couple of lads over here, we want to say hello to them. The boys that worked on the timber, Conor Dwyer. Conor, how are you
aiming? You well?
I saw your project this evening, Johnny Hayes as well.
Oh, lovely. Yeah,
just here opposite at Lachine's, a great piece of work.
Yeah, good piece of work. We're delighted to get the chance to do it, and I went up to Phillips and Liz's, and it's just great to have such a great artist in our midst, you know, that and stone work carver, and that we got a chance to learn from him and see what he done, yeah. You know what I mean, and how to do it and how to carve. Like, there is a lot of work and goes into it, and we had to work hard on it, you know. But
so what did you actually do, Johnny?
Well, we just took out a drawing there of one of the things in the Abbey here, men's heads, and Stephen Connor got at it, and we started to carve it out. And we didn't like it at first because we thought we were never going to make it now. But then we saw it coming into shape, we got heart, and we fell in love with it.
terrific. And your late dad, of course, one of the caretakers here in the Abbey all those years ago.
Good for years.
We did his history and story. Yeah. Absolutely magic. You enjoyed it, Conor, did you?
Oh, I did. We enjoyed it. I enjoyed it great. And I think anybody got the chance of doing it, you should do it, you know, because it's a great course and it's great.
We're great.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Well done, lads. It's a lovely project. Thanks very much. Peter Drake is with us. How are you doing, Peter?
How do you do? Yeah.
You like being here in this beautiful historic abbey?
I do. I worked on the feline sculpture outside, which is quite interesting because I've seen it for the first time this evening. In reality, I worked from photographs and so on before, but... Now I can see at least we got a bit of a likeness of it anyway.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like, you can see it from in here and you can see it from out there.
That's correct. It's actually quite tiny. It's only a couple of inches big here, and of course the one we did is almost 6 foot tall, so there was quite a transformation.
It's hugely fine work, isn't it?
Yeah. And
you're working from drawings and all of that, I'm sure.
I work from a photograph, from a book about the Abbey, and then I made a clay model of it, and then we started working on the wood, which was quite an experience. I mean, I'm as you can probably tell, I've been retired for some time, and it was quite a revelation in that. This is the first time I've done wood carving, so it was...
You have enriched the community, the people that come here and visit, they just love what you do.
Well, I hope so, and I feel very, very proud to have been able to create something which is going to be here.
Peter Drake, as always. Nice to join us, Peter. Eddie, Derek and Oliver is with me. How are you doing, lads?
Great.
Special moment for you here tonight. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's great to be here now to see everybody turned out to see our sculptures and what we did.
Yeah, terrific. Talk to me about what you did, Peter.
Me and Oliver Keaton, this is Eddie talking. We did the sculpture on the way into the church here. You can see it looks a bit like a chalice, but very proud of it. It's I parked up at the island there one day. Someone was taking a photograph of it and someone else pulled up and was asking who carved it, and I told him it was me and Oliver Keaton. Magic, great feeling.
Must be a great feeling.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. Oh, really.
And you as well, Peter? Derek Carell.
Well, the bit I did was up in the green. As you come in, there's a ram, three pieces on one stone. There's a ram's head, which is a very striking piece, an owl at one side, and I just did a little kind of a tree, I suppose, with a creature in it, I suppose, is the only way of... explaining what it is, but it was taken from, inspiration was taken from the Abbey here, so you know, everything we did connects back to the Abbey.
Great. Oliver, you for yourself?
Yeah, I'm delighted. It was a great chance to work on the stone. I always do a bit of DIY, but I never got involved in the stone, but we had an absolutely brilliant time.
Mm-hmm. What does it do for you now, lads, when you have achieved that success? You continue on cutting out pieces out of stone?
Yeah, you'd like to try and continue on, but trying to get a bit of inspiration together is, you know, just being in the Abbey here like tonight, you see bits and pieces that you could tip away at yourself, but there's a sharp chisel and a good hammer is all you need.
The stone man himself,
he was absolutely brilliant. He was always on our shoulder.
Every success. Congratulations on the great award.
I've done a couple of other pieces with Philip before. It's really enjoyable to do. Really enjoyable.
Nice to be here, lads.
Yeah.
Well, another amazing feature about Holy Cross Abbey is a whispering arch. Let's hear what happens.
Thanks very much for coming to Holy Cross Abbey.
So that's my lot for this week. My thanks to all our guests on this week's program. A special thanks to Tom Geller, John Burke, for setting up the program here at Holy Cross Abbey. What a beautiful place in here in the very center of County Tipperary. And if you ever get a chance, why not come up and have a great look at some of the great features here in Holy Cross Abbey. So until next week, from all of us on the program, a very good week. Bye-bye. Sanctus Iansus.